Welcome everyone to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. Henrietta, my golden angel chicken, and I welcome you. And let's do as we usually do and begin our time together with a period of brief meditation. So if you are able, coming to a comfortable position and allowing your eyes to close if you'd like. Beginning with just taking a few deep breaths. Whatever perhaps we've been doing throughout the day, just breathing and allowing our nervous systems to slow down, to be. And imagining that deep within each of us is this sparkly golden light. It's a place in all of our minds that we all share. It's that place where we have not forgotten who it is we truly are. And with each miracle we perform, with each expression of love that we give, each moment that we are willing and open in allowing our minds to shift, our perception to be shifted, this sparkly inner golden light becomes more noticeable. It's always there. We just come to realize that we've just been blocking it. Miracle by miracle, and little bit of willingness by little bit of willingness, our awareness of this light grows bright and pronounced. And here we rest. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you. Certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place Holy Spirit in charge tonight by our request. I'm taking a nice deep breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now. Welcome everyone. So glad you are here. Welcome everyone on the phone and our extended family on Facebook. Today, we are going to read cameo number 9, Mrs. Albert, Miracle Worker. I love Mrs. Albert and I love this teaching. It reminds me, as we get into it in a few pages, some very important teaching, I think, on people pleasing, not being a people pleaser, but instead speaking from guidance, speaking from spirit. But before we get to that, we have some reading to do. So again, I'll just take it a few paragraphs. Actually, maybe in the beginning, it might be a couple pages before we pause. We have a few pages here to get through for this cameo this evening. But let's dive in. All right, Mrs. Albert, Miracle Worker. After a discussion of the golden rule and golden rule behavior, Jesus says to Helen, Bill and you need considerable clarification of the channel role. In other words, the role of channeling miracles. To provide this clarification, he points to the example of Mrs. Albert, whom Helen has apparently just run into at the hospital bedside of Dave Diamond, a close colleague of Helen's who is dying of brain cancer. Look carefully at Mrs. Albert. She is working miracles every day because she knows who she is. After this pregnant comment, Jesus turns to Helen's tendency to get people's names wrong. I emphasize again that your tendency to forget names is not hostility, but a fear of involvement or recognition. You had misinterpreted human encounters as opportunities for magic rather than for miracles, and so you tried to protect the name. This is a very ancient and primitive way of trying to protect a person. Note the very old Jewish practice of changing the name of a person who is very ill, so that when the list is given to the angel of death, the person with that name will not be found. So Robert Perry's commentary continues. It could easily seem that Helen's forgetting of names expresses an underlying hostility. But Jesus assures her that instead, she is actually trying to protect people from her hostility. By limiting her involvement with them, she is trying to limit their exposure to a destructive element in her, much like keeping your distance from others so that you don't infect them with your cult. And getting their names wrong does just that. It creates a distance, a buffer, that keeps her quote-unquote germs from reaching them. This was actually the very first thing that Helen had written about when she started her notebooks 2 days before the course began coming through, hence Jesus's comment above, I emphasize again. I think there is an error about this not noticing and not remembering names, etc. I do not think it's only or even primarily projection. It may be more a fear of involvement or interaction due to an interpretation of interaction as one above and the other subservient, or one getting and the other losing. You avoid this if you don't meet or even see. The reference in her current guidance to the very old Jewish practice expresses the same basic view. Somewhere inside, she believes that if she gets people's names wrong, the quote-unquote angel of death in her mind cannot find them. As this analogy implies, Helen's attempt to protect others from her destructive desires is quite primitive, almost childlike in nature, a point which Jesus then makes. This is a good example of that curiously literal regression which can occur in very bright people when they become afraid. You and Bill both do it. Actually, it is a device closely related to the phobia, in the sense that they, or in the air text it said both, narrow fear to a simple aspect of a much larger problem in order to enable them to avoid it. The explanation from Robert is, Helen is so afraid of her desire to exploit others that she regresses and comes up with this childlike solution. She reduces the larger problem of her destructive tendencies down to the specific issue of people's names. By narrowing the problem down to a smaller, more manageable package, she thinks she can now magically control it. Just get their names wrong and they'll be safe. Jesus then likens this basic strategy to phobias, specifically, it seems, to the Freudian view of phobias. Freud's most famous example of a phobia was the case of Hans. Hans was a boy who feared his father and wanted him to die, but then displaced this fear and aggression onto something safer, horses. He thus developed a phobia of horses. Now all he had to do was avoid horses, and his problem was solved. Both Hans and Helen then narrowed a larger problem down to something simpler and more manageable in order to magically solve it. Jesus sees still more examples of the same basic strategy. A similar mechanism works. So this is Jesus again. A similar mechanism works when you get furious about a comparatively minor infraction by someone to whom you are ambivalent. A good example of this is your response to Jonathan, who does leave things around in very strange ways. Actually, he does this because he thinks that by minor areas of disorganization, he can protect his stability. I remind you that you have done this yourself for years and should understand it very well. This should be met with great charity rather than great fury. The fury comes from your awareness that you do not love Jonathan as you should, and you narrow your lack of love by centering your hate on a trivial behavior in an attempt to protect him from it. You also call him Jonathan for the same reason. See the previous reference. So again, Jonathan is her husband, whose real name is, did we just say it here? Anybody? Lewis. Yes, that's what it is. Thank you. Okay, let's pause there and just talk about this, because this is kind of a lot. All right. So Jesus is basically saying, so Helen has this tendency to not remember people's names. She changes her husband's name, Lewis, to Jonathan. Jesus likens it to this very old Jewish practice of changing the name of a person who's very ill. So when that list is given to the angel of death, the person with that name will not be found. In Helen's case, Jesus is saying that basically it's serving as almost like a defense from getting close to people, because she's afraid of hurting them with her, I'm looking for the word again. I see germs in quotes, but protect the name. Let me just see. I feel like it's right here. Her hostility. That's what it says. She's actually trying to protect people from her hostility. So she uses that sort of mechanism of forgetting to protect people. And Jesus and in the commentary here talks about how that's almost childlike in nature, which is taking a problem and reducing it down to something simple and manageable. So it seems like if you manage that small issue, then you can fix it and be in control of it, when in fact it's actually much bigger. You know, when I was reading this before, I was like, this sounds familiar to me. I'm sure I have personal examples that relate to this, but I couldn't think of any. So if anybody has one that you can think of that relates to your life, feel free to share. I feel like it's like just beneath the surface of my mind. But what I can say, the very last paragraph right before we paused. Actually, I'm going to just back up a couple sentences. When Jesus says to Helen, I remind you that you have done this yourself for years and should understand it very well. So this pattern of her husband's should be met with great charity rather than great fury. The fury comes from your awareness that you do not love Jonathan as you should, and you narrow your lack of love by centering your hate on a trivial behavior in an attempt to protect him from it. Now that is something that I actually can relate to, and I can relate to quite easily. And I've shared with all of you before challenges that I've had in my own personal life with certain family members, and with one family member in particular, and I've shared a little bit about this before. This relationship had just always been riddled with a lot of conflict and a pushing away on my part, a wanting to keep distance. And part of that, and I relate to this so deeply, is it was a recognition that I didn't love this person as I should. And there was a deep part of me that felt guilty for that. And it was easier to keep that person away and look at, you know, maybe more trivial things that they did that weren't helpful or good in my judgment, to keep them at a distance. But the real issue was that I didn't love them as I should. Now this ties into, for those of you who've been on the call for a long time, I've shared bits and pieces of the healing journey that has happened with this particular family member, but it involved me. Actually, it involved a podcast that I listened to from Robert Perry, joined by Emily Bennington, and they were sort of back and forth on this idea that the Course says we have murderous attack thoughts. And Emily was like, murderous attack thoughts? You mean judgment thoughts? And Robert Perry was like, no, murderous attack thoughts. And that actually gave me permission to access like really icky stuff in my own mind relating to this family member. And it was only when I went there and owned that, that a huge, it felt like a stopper of a in a bathtub was pulled from the drain. And this clearing happened where for the first time, I could say, honestly, for the first time in my entire life, I felt like I could truly, truly love that person. So these final sentences of what Jesus shares here about the fury comes from your awareness that you do not love Jonathan as you should, that hits me quite hard because of that experience that I've had with this family member. So that can be a question that we all sort of ponder. Who are we not loving like we should? And what is coming up in us that might be masking the fact that we don't love them as we should, and either we feel guilty or, you know, it upsets us, or we want to keep that person at bay. Anyway, that's what I wanted to share. So I'm going to pause here. I feel like I just said a lot. Any comments or questions so far, or anything that anyone wants to share?
Oh, hi, Corinne. Cheryl.
Hi. Hi, Cheryl.
So I'm gonna share something that's personal.
Thank you.
I read this cameo a couple months ago, mm-hmm. and I always seem to relate to Helen a lot. I don't know what it is, but I can like see myself in her sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I have this thing where my friends call me a hermit because I rarely socialize. And I spend a lot of time by myself. And this has just been like in the last probably 5-6 years. And so when I read this and I really thought about it, I used to tell myself that the reason why I didn't socialize a lot is because I was afraid of other people hurting me. Mm-hmm. And when I really thought about it some more and like worked on it, I realized that I had forgiven people, but I was worried that I was going to hurt other people.
Oh, wow.
Because there's this running theme that I have where I have a hard time forgiving myself. And it's even something that I work with my mom over, because my mom's always saying, you're too hard on yourself. What is it? You know? So anyway, I realized that's why I was not socializing and becoming a hermit.
Wow.
So anyway, yeah. So that's still something that, even though I came to the realization, it's not something that I was able to just undo and go, okay, now I'll just go out and be around everybody. I'm still working on it.
Uh-huh. Oh, Cheryl, I got goosebumps when you just shared that, because that's the kind of awareness and willingness that we need on this journey, is to really like question, you know, whatever we might think, like how you started saying, afraid of others hurting me, like you stopped and you questioned that and looked at like the reverse of that, like the fear of hurting others. And when you said that, I got goosebumps, because that's just that level of willingness and awareness that we're being asked to use on this pathway. Because otherwise, if we're not, you know, questioning things, nothing changes. So that's really profound. And I really deeply thank you for sharing something like that that's so personal with us, because that is what this course is prompting us to do, to really, really look and to speak also to what you said about, like, you know, you see it doesn't just vanish. I hear you. Like I totally relate to that too. It's one thing, you know, to see it, and it's another thing for things to shift, but it all comes down to, number one, seeing it, and number two, continuing to have that willingness, which I know you do. So that's really awesome. Thank you, Cheryl, so much for sharing that. Do you feel complete?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you. I really appreciate that. Wow. And that's like, I feel like, and this is just something I think for all of us just to think about, is we don't know what we don't know. So can we practice this like radical honesty and this like deep willingness of looking deeper than just like the first answer that comes to us, you know, whatever we might think is going on, like, wait, can I question and go deeper? And I love, Cheryl, how you also said too, just relating to Helen. And that's why I get so excited that this background information is available to us now, because I also find Helen and Bill's personal examples incredibly relatable to my own life. And it makes the course for me come much more alive.
Fred.
So again, thank you, Cheryl. Paula.
What Cheryl just said, isn't there a section in the course that says it's never what you thought they did to you, but what you thought you did to them?
Right.
And that can be a very elusive idea.
Right? And it kind of turns upside down everything that we think.
Yeah. Am I right about that, though? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's something. Yeah, I don't know where it is, but you're right.
Wow. That's something to consider, I guess.
Yeah, I know somebody, Nikki, is asking for that reference, and I can try to find it after the call, and I can post it on the caption of this video in our Facebook group, because it's easy. I just always go to like one of the Course in Miracles websites and type in some keywords, and that's how I find the reference. So I can do that. Thank you for that, Paula. And I love, that's also too how I love that. This is why I so appreciate everybody sharing your stories, because it brings these teachings alive. Like Paula, the fact that you just made that connection with whatever that quote is somewhere, here it is. You know, we have our real life examples that show like that these teachings actually have something to them. They're pointing us in a good direction to really look as hard as it can be, as we've talked about before we started recording. It's not all fun and games. It can be tough. Anyone else? Dave.
Yeah. Hi everyone. This is well, it comes up Tweaker. It's actually Jana.
Hi. Oh, hi Jana. Hello, it's so nice to see you.
My father's computer, and he passed, and I kept the name out of because it always reminds me of him.
Aww, that's lovely.
That was his password or his handle, whatever you call it. I have kind of a question wrapped in a story. I've shared with you many a number of people that I have a child that has multiple disabilities. And this actually really struck me, because I've really noticed the great fury I've had, the great fury that she's not like other people. She's wonderful. So on that end, it's like a mixed bag. She's just this most amazing person. And at the same time, there's some real issues there that have left me feeling like a victim and with great fury. And nothing like the Course in Miracles to make it come right up to your surface and say, you got to look at it. Mm-hmm. I have noticed lately that her need of me, I have been rather resentful of, because, and I had an aha moment when I was listening to all of you. My resentment, I believe, and I'll investigate this a little more, a lot comes from my feeling of helplessness. And so instead of feeling that helplessness, it was easier for me to go to the fury. But the bottom line is I have a very limited lack of love. And maybe it's because I have no idea what love is. I have it from a limited viewpoint. I would certainly take a bullet from her in a heartbeat. I've certainly been a mama bear to her with her in with teachers and whatnot. But I can definitely relate to Helen, and definitely relate as I go down her anger towards small things, like you know, when her husband left socks on the floor. So much of my anger and my fury is over small things.
Wow.
It's safer to go over being absolutely furious over the small things than to actually really acknowledge the real deep thing that's going on.
That's powerful, Jana. And you're pointing to something very insightful and worth looking, like you're saying, that those feelings of helplessness can be bigger than it seems, you know, our capacity to handle at times, or whatever, you know, that bigger underlying feeling might be. And we have to always remember that when we're looking at these feelings, when we're feeling them, that we're not doing so alone. We have the Holy Spirit.
I'm wondering too, just to bring this up a little bit more for all of us, it just brings up so much of my life right now, and maybe the world too, this feeling of helplessness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Triggers anger.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, when maybe for all of us, and I'd like input, but for me, when I feel helpless and I don't know what the answer is, I kind of swirl in a bowl of anger. Mm-hmm. And it's really fear. That's all that is, fear.
That's what it is. That's all it is. And so that's big, what you just said. That's a very big recognition and acknowledgement. And again, it's awesome that you're willing to look at that and to see that. And that's the work that we're cut out to look at with the Holy Spirit. So thank you, Jana. I really appreciate you sharing. I'm so glad you're here. It's so nice to see your face. I want to transition us to reading again, but Dave, I think did you have a question or a comment?
I just had a comment.
Oh, go for it.
It just was on the tail end of the conversation that a previous conversation that I think it can be less than productive to go in trying to excavate and trying to look for, let's see, how do I want to say this? things that we need to bring to the light. And I guess what I mean by that is if you go on a witch hunt, you will find witches. Mm-hmm. So it's like we may actually be finding things that really aren't a valid part of the ego, but we're projecting those onto our personality. And anyway, so I, like I said, that from a previous conversation. So
gotcha. Yeah. Thank you, Dave. You know, it's whatever it is, whether it's something we're adding or something that's there, it's all, I always think of that diagram. I don't have a copy of it nearby, but it's from the Circle of Atonement. It's a diagram of the mind, and in the center is love. Like, it's a circle that represents our mind, and the center is love. And then I adapted this for anxiety. There's clouds and there's stuff all around it trying to hide our awareness of that blazing love. And that's what all this, all these other things are, but we've made them real. You know, we believe we're here in these bodies. And so we've got to be where we are.
Looks like John has the,
Oh, John, you have it. Oh, that's not the one I'm thinking of, but that one's cool. It's a diagram of the mind workbook meditation. I think it was like a workbook meditation diagram. I have my version on my computer somewhere, but I don't want to take the time to find it, but maybe I'll show you next time. But if you find the one, if you know what I'm talking about, John, you find it, let me know. Let's keep reading. So we have a little bit to go here. We're going to hear more about Mrs. Albert. All right, so, but we're still here with the name stuff. Here we have two new examples of the same principle. Helen is frightened by her general lack of love toward her husband, Lewis, whom she calls Jonathan, for the very reasons already discussed. To protect him from the full weight of her anger, she reduces it to anger about something quite trivial, his behavior of leaving things around in very strange ways. For instance, Helen shared in a letter to Bill how she got absolutely wild when she saw that Lewis had left his socks on the living room table. Ironically, this trivial behavior of Lewis's comes from him employing the same basic strategy. He thinks he can avert general chaos by purposefully setting up, quote unquote, minor areas of disorganization, and then convincing himself the chaos is literally corralled in those tiny areas. Helen should be able to understand this, Jesus says, since she has done the same thing for years. He then offers this gem of marital advice. This should be met with great charity rather than great fury. I just want to pause for a moment. I just had a, oh my gosh, example come to mind. When I'm feeling like things are just overwhelming and out of control, I start organizing my desk and my office until things feel in control, like my space is neat, and it gives me like a more of a sense of control back. Little aha. Jesus now returns to the subject of names. Note that a name is the human symbol that stands for a person. Superstitions about names are very common for just that reason. That is also why people sometimes respond with anger when their names are spelled or pronounced incorrectly. Because they stand for a person, names can easily become a kind of verbal voodoo doll, so that mistreatment of the name seems to be magically transferred to the person herself. Jesus then explains, in teaching that is included in chapter 1 of the text, that the Jewish superstition about changing names was a distortion of a revelation. This revelation actually said that those who change their mind, not name, about destruction or hate, do not need to die. In other words, the original revelation claimed that if you can solve the real problem, if you can change your mind about hate, you can actually transcend death. This sounds extreme, but then as proof, Jesus offers his own resurrection. He implies that this is how his resurrection came about, through him letting go all of his hate. That is why I demonstrated that death does not exist. I'll pause here for a moment and we'll keep reading because we have a lot to go. But actually, let me read one more paragraph. This then is the path that Helen needs to take. Rather than reducing the problem of hate down to a trivial matter of changing names, something the interpreters of the original revelation seem to have done as well, she needs to face and solve the problem itself. If she does, she will experience her own resurrection. So if we can change our mind about hate, if we can love more, another way of saying that, if we can love as we are truly meant to love, you can actually transcend death. And as it says here in the commentary, it might sound extreme, but then Jesus offers proof. He demonstrated that death does not exist. This, I'm sure some of you remember that it was actually, I think, my most recent podcast that I published on The Body Does Not Have to Die. And it's just always helpful for me to come back. You know, that's not an idea that necessarily I walk around with on a day-to-day basis, but it's a helpful idea to remember that this is where we're going. This is why we're doing this work, is to undo the belief and the dream of death. And it's through loving, it's through being miracle workers and extending that love. And this also just, I have to mention, I know I keep bringing up the love lens, but it's just so important to me that here, even with racism, why it's so important to me as a white woman to stop and turn around and face this problem head on and look at it and look at the blocks to love that I have in my mind surrounding race and racism. And this is the only way. It's the only way to heal. We have to look. So I will pause there and how about we keep reading? We're going to come back to Mrs. Albert now. After some further teaching, also included in chapter 1, Jesus came back to Mrs. Albert. Returning to Mrs. Albert, not Andrews, she corrected your error about her name without embarrassment and without hostility, because she has not made your own mistake about names. She is not afraid because she knows she is protected. She made the correction only because you were inaccurate and the whole question of embarrassment did not occur to her. Clearly, Helen had done it again, calling Mrs. Albert Mrs. Andrews. Mrs. Albert, however, did not take this personally. She didn't see mistreatment of her name as mistreatment of her. How could she, when she saw her identity as safe, secure, safe, and unassailable? In her eyes, then, the issue wasn't about her. It was just a simple matter of correct terminology. This allowed her to rise above both hostility and embarrassment, which often seem to us like the only two options. She was able to respond without hostility, aggressively, in other words, aggressively asserting her correct name, and without embarrassment, feeling too shy to speak up. She corrected Helen purely as a matter of factual accuracy, and remarkably, the whole question of embarrassment did not occur to her. So Jesus continues. She was also quite unembarrassed when she told you that everything has to be done to preserve life, because you never can tell when God may come and say, "Get up, Dave," and then he will. She did not ask what you believed first, and afterwards merely added, "And it's true too." The right answer to the SCT, the sentence completion test item, is, "When they told me what to do, I referred the question to the only real authority." Helen later offers this clarification in the ER text. Helen Schuckman, note, if you ask somebody what he believes before you tell him what you believe, then you are implying that you will say what he approves. This is not the real authority. Just as Mrs. Albert was unembarrassed in correcting Helen about her name, so she was equally unembarrassed in declaring her convictions about the power of God to heal the dying. Jesus praises her for this, framing it as the correct choice on the issue of authority. If before speaking, she had first tested the waters to see if Helen would agree with her, then she would have made Helen her authority. Instead, she openly expressed her convictions without knowing what Helen would think, because it is implied she felt prompted by God. Thus, when faced with the question of what to say, she referred the question to the only real authority. Oh, do I pause or do I keep reading? Let's pause for a moment. This is going to continue with some teaching about Mrs. Albert. So we come back to Mrs. Albert, who corrects Helen not out of embarrassment, not out of hostility, but just for factual purposes. And she speaks as prompted by spirit when she says, "You can never, everything has to be done to preserve life, because you never can tell when God may come and say, 'Get up, Dave,' and then he will." And then she adds, "And it's true too." Now, what strikes me about this discussion is how it says that if before speaking, if she had first tested the waters to see if Helen would agree with her, then Mrs. Albert would have made Helen her authority rather than speaking from spirit, rather than speaking from guidance. And this is the lesson that I really take from this, because my goodness, people pleasing has been something that it's been like a lifelong thing, and I've worked very hard to not be a people pleaser, but reading this is always just so refreshing to hear Mrs. Albert speak from spirit and not put any energy into the ego thought of, "Oh, is Helen going to agree with me? What is Helen going to think? Is she going to think I'm this crazy religious person?" No, she's just prompted to say it, and she says it. And Jesus praises that. He uses this as an example. So I just heard some sound. Was somebody going to share? Hi, Carla. Oh, hi, Courtney. I'm seeing faces I didn't see before. And Kim.
Is this the one?
Is that you? Nope, that's not the one. Oh. Sorry.
I'm not gonna look anymore.
It's okay. It's okay. It's a circle. It's a circle one, but I can share it later. Thank you for trying though. Oh,
Corinne.
Yes.
I was actually kind of shocked when you read that she would say something like that. I thought she can't mean what that implied. What she did, that was a pretty radical thing to say.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You mean that everything should be done to preserve life because you can never tell when God might get up and say, get up, Dave.
Get up, Dave, and then he will. I mean, yeah, you have to be pretty secure in your own mind to say something like that.
That's a good word, secure, and really grounded in spirit and not in ego, because it's so easy for somebody to say that from my spiritual path is the right way. This is how it is. Like to push your beliefs on somebody else. It's so easy to slip in that direction. You know, when we hear something like this, it's easy to go maybe in the other direction with like, oh, should I say this? You know, should I not? Let me test the waters. And so it seems like Mrs. Albert is walking the like very strong, like firm on that line of just speaking from spirit, speaking the truth. Because I mean, if you think about it, how many stories have we heard of people rising from their deathbeds or having a near-death experience and then rising, like Anita Morjani, who was, you know, really, I believe, very, very, like cancer was just eating up her body and she was dying and then she comes back. So how do we explain these things? So yeah, Mrs. Albert was not in, it sounds like not in ego. It's a good example. It's a good example for us. Anybody have any, anybody who hasn't shared yet have any comments or questions? Let's keep reading then. Okay, so I think we left off. Did we leave off Jesus implies the teaching included in chapter one? Is that where I'm picking up? It's kind of like the top of page 1741. No. No, that is. I think that's where we're at. We ended with the sentence, thus when faced with the question of what to say, she referred the question to the only real authority. Okay, picking up from there. Jesus implies in teaching included in chapter one, that by referring the question to the real authority, Mrs. Albert was witnessing for him rather than being ashamed of him. She was standing up for her belief in Jesus and his teaching. He concludes, those who witness for me are expressing through their miracles that they have abandoned deprivation in favor of the abundance they have learned belongs to them. This clearly implies that Mrs. Albert's statement about God's power to heal Dave was a miracle. Thus, we have yet another concrete example of a miracle in this early dictation. To understand why this was a miracle, you need to put yourself in Helen's shoes. Here you are, getting this woman's name wrong in order to put distance between the two of you so that your hostility can't reach her. You might also be holding back your own spiritual beliefs and experiences because, as Jesus tells Helen more than once, you are embarrassed by your love of Jesus. Overall, then, you are keeping your distance out of fear of involvement. Fear that is rooted in a sense of your own identity as being flawed and shaky. And now, here's Mrs. Albert, sweeping that distance away. As you stand at the bedside of a dying friend, she innocently declares, you never can tell when God may come and say, get up, Dave, and then he will. She affirms, in other words, that God's love has power over even the most terminal disease, including the one right in front of you. She doesn't bother to first check out if you'll agree, and afterwards, instead of apologizing for her directness, she merely adds, and it's true too. Imagine the effect on you if, as Jesus implies, She says all this without a hint of hostility, without any attempt to force her beliefs on you. In other words, she's not people-pleasing. Would it not lift your mind into new possibilities? And would it not model to you a new way of being? In this new way, you could feel secure in an identity that is pure and protected. And out of this security, you could fearlessly share with others what gives you that security, the power and love of God. This clear and direct channel from your heart to their ears would replace the neurotic fear of involvement that crippled you before. No wonder Jesus told Helen and Bill to look carefully at Mrs. Albert. She had already become the kind of channel that he was trying to train them to be. This does not mean that she held any unusual metaphysical beliefs. Indeed, the clues in this material suggest she may well have been a traditional Christian. Yet she had what Jesus saw as the key ingredient. She was working miracles every day. And we made it to the end of Cameo 9. I really like how it says toward the bottom of page 1741, imagine the effect on you, as Jesus implies, if she says all this without a hint of hostility, without any attempt to force her beliefs on you, would it not lift your mind into new possibilities? And I feel like that's the key, because if a person is coming from ego, it's going to shut down new possibilities. It's going to make you feel maybe defensive or like, oh, this person is trying to push their stuff on me. But if she's coming from a clean, open, guided place, that touches that in you.
It's love. She's saying it with love.
Yes. Right? Yes. 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 She's saying it with love. Was that Laurel? I think I just.
Yes, it is.
Yes. Hi.
Hello.
Oh, glad you're here.
Thanks.
Oh, so, you know, the one thing that came up in my mind as we were reading this about Mrs. Albert affirming that God's love has power over even the most terminal disease, including the one right in front of you, I think about a recent-ish podcast that I listened to by Dr. Zach Bush. I'm not sure if anybody follows him. I became sort of obsessed with his work. He does a lot with soil health and gut health. What turned me on to him was the fact that he is incredibly spiritual and has a lot of hospice experience. And I listened to this part of a podcast where he was talking about bringing people back to life. You know, when you see in the movies, like the defibrillator and somebody dies and they use the defibrillator and it brings them back to life. He said that's usually like a Hollywood thing. Like in reality, that usually doesn't happen. It's more rare to bring somebody back. And he was speaking about this, I believe, I don't remember if it was three in a row, but it was three instances that were very close to each other. Three different people from all walks of life. It was, I think, a Black man, a white middle-aged woman, and a child were these three different people. And they were dying, and he brought them back, either through the defibrillator or what else, whatever it was. And he said that every single one of them, all three of them, again, three completely different people, said, "Why did you bring me back?" So there is a choice that also happens that, you know, if it was just about God's love, like, you know, then maybe everybody would be healed. But we have this decision point too, where some people are like, I'm not coming back to that limited, you know, that limited perception and that limited body. I just got a taste of reality, and I'm out of here. So I just wanted to add that to you, because it's always stuck with me that all three of those people said, "Why did you bring me back?" Oh, any comments or questions? We have like 9 minutes left, so we can hang out and chit chat if anybody has to go. Kim, hello, Kim.
Hello.
Hi.
It just reminded me of a story that I read on near-death experiences. I've read a lot of stuff as well, trying to transcend the limited stuff. And one woman had a near-death experience and she was pregnant, but while she had it in this place of like love that cannot be described in words, she was told that her child, who was about to be born, would die in 3 days. And she was elated. She was actually, oh, my baby gets to be here. She was like, it's just so mind-blowing to hear it from that perspective. And when she came back into her body, and she's still very much in that in-between state, the story went that she said she actually had to pretend to grieve because the baby was born healthy. By day three, it had deteriorated and then passed. And she could not explain it to anybody.
Wow.
So she had to pretend to grieve, but she was just so full and so happy because she knew what that was and where her child was. And that's just, she eventually convinced her husband. But I guess that would have had to have been a spiritual journey and epiphany all of his own. But it's just so powerful that we've got really no, tiny, tiny little concept of what that could be like, to be like that with your baby. With
my goodness. Wow. That gave me goosebumps too, just for her to have that knowing. Yeah. And it's just, it would be socially unacceptable. People would be like, what's wrong with you? You're not grieving. You're not like, what's going on? But the fact that she knew what she knew, my goodness. Wow. Thank you, Kim. Thank you so much. Laurel, I see you raised your hand.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking about what an incredible teacher of God Mrs. Albert is being. And demonstrating what that's like.
Right?
That's the inspiration that I get from her. It's like, this is how you do it. Mm-hmm. You just say it and you don't care what somebody else thinks. And because you're saying it with this pure knowing and this pure belief and this pure love because you love God, mm-hmm. How that really can affect. That's like, to me, I think that's probably the best way that as teachers of God, we can possibly have effects on people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm right there with you, Laurel. I agree. She's a wonderful example of a teacher of God. And I'd like to be more like her. She's a good role model. Yes. A really good role model. Thank you for that. John.
Yeah, I just, the last two couple of days, you know, I'm following Robert's text lessons and stuff. And the last couple of days, it's kind of related to this in the sense where it's talking about how our illusions, that we don't join with the illusion, that it says in chapter 28:4 that the dream is but illusion in the mind, and with the mind you would unite, but never with the dream. Mm. And that's kind of what Mrs. Albert was doing. She was not accepting the fact that he's brain dead or whatever, or that he's dying. She's like, well, he could wake up any minute, you know? Mm-hmm. So she just kind of stepped out of that illusion that he's dying and that he could wake up any minute. Mm-hmm. And that's what it says we have to do, is that no one can actually be sick unless we join with him. That we have to join together, and it takes two minds to join together. And if we don't join with them and we denounce the illusion, then we accept the miracle. Mm. I just thought that was kind of interesting.
That sure is. It's fascinating to think about too. And I my mind immediately goes to like also how like knowing that and holding that in your mind, and then at the same time being where you are, because again, I'm so in the love lens right now with how we can use those teachings then to bypass certain things. You know, I'm keeping my mind only on the truth, and I'm not buying into any of this. And I love that the course is teaching us how to see past appearances. And then at the same time, we also have to, you know, be where we are as well. anyway, that just made, that came up for me. But thank you for sharing that, John, because that's what the course is saying.
You know, Corinne.
Paula, and then I don't know whose other voice.
The other voice is Cheryl.
Oh, Cheryl. Okay, Paula, then Cheryl.
I just wanted to say what John just read. Mm-hmm. Could so well be applied to this whole COVID situation. You know, I'm trying not to buy into it. I'm trying to live my life in a normal sort of way, but it's, you know, I really got to keep my focus on the course in order to do that.
What interesting times we live in. Gosh, that's a whole other discussion. You know, I've never been one who has ever shared any memes that are like, you know, I've seen them. Like 2018, you were terrible because all these celebrities died. And 2019, you sucked because of these whatever. And 2020 has been rough. So I'm not going to be sad when I say goodbye to it. But anyway, so Cheryl.
I wanted to comment on what John said also, because I thought it was cool, because it made me think of my boss. Mm-hmm. Whenever I'm not feeling well, like I've been working for this guy for about 7 years. And during that time, anytime I ever have to call in sick or tell him that I'm not well for some reason, he always says to me something. I can't quote him completely, but he says something like, that's not true for you. I know what's true for you is that you're healthy and strong and you'll be fine in a couple of days, or you're going to be fine tomorrow or whatever. And whenever he does it, every single time it catches me off guard and I go, what? To myself, I go, oh, okay, thanks, Joe. But to myself, I go, what the heck? Why did he say that? And then I hang up the phone and I go, that's so cool. And I listen to him and I go, he's right. You know, and so then later when I talk to him again, I always say to him, you know, thanks for doing that. Thanks for setting me straight, Joe.
That's Cheryl. Mrs. Albert, Mr. Joe. That's really
what you cut out. I didn't hear you.
Oh, he's being like Mrs. Albert in being his own Joe way with those words. Like that's yeah. That's really cool. Wow. Something holding the truth for us. Yes. Was that John?
I just want to go back to the love lens, like you were saying. And I think it's true, like you say, we do have to sometimes look past it, just like Bill, when he wanted to get the vaccination, or you know, want to know what to do, and Jesus told him, well, go ahead and get the vaccination. You know, it's like, if that's going to make you feel better. So if our fear level is up here, we need to get the vaccination. If our love level is up here, then we don't need the vaccination. We can see past it.
Right.
Yeah, we have to be conscious of other people's feelings and affections, and you know what they're doing too.
Yeah, and be honest about where we are. You're absolutely right, because this, you know, I found in my own experience that this work with the course for me has not been about just hearing an idea like I'm not a body and repeating it so many times to myself that I believe it. It hasn't worked that way for me at all. Instead, it's that, okay, awesome, I'm not a body, but damn, I'm freaking out right now. It's really scary. Holy Spirit, help. An experience comes in at some point that shows me that I'm not a body. So I have this like actual experience, and my trust goes up a little, and then it happens again. It goes up a little bit more. And I gain in this recognition that, oh, that teaching is true. I'm not a body. It doesn't come from this intellectual repetition. It comes from fully being, you know, where I am. So I agree with you, John, that we have to be where we are. And if fear is really, really high, get the vaccine. Jesus told, when the first time I heard that, I was like, Jesus told Bill to get a vaccine? Like what kind of, you know, guidance is that? But yeah, that's what he said. And he said to follow the authorities too. So yeah, thank you, John.
Rin.
Courtney, yes, we have to be where we are. And I just wanted to add, Jana, one moment. I just wanted to add, Andrea, thank you. In addition to love, she's saying it with absolute conviction and inner knowing. Absolutely. Thank you, Andrea. Jana, and then we're gonna wrap up.
And then I'm forgive me for not knowing how to raise my hand on the Zoom. I'm Zoom handicapped.
No, you're not. This is perfect.
But I just have something real quick. There's something that happened to me, and I just want to share it because it had some multiple lessons. I don't know if anyone heard on the news about the fire in Nevada, in Reno, Nevada, the Pine Haven fires. It was national news. I was in a firestorm on that this week. I'm a volunteer for hospice, and I was at my client's house, and the police were running door to door saying, you got to get out now. There was no 5 minutes. There was no 15 minutes. It's like now. The police carried my client out to my car, and we just had to hightail it out of there because the fire was like right behind us. In fact, it destroyed a house just four doors down from them. And what kept coming to my mind in all of that is, and in working with my clients too, this gentleman's very, very fragile. He is obviously with hospice, so he is in the final stages of this life. But I keep, and this conversation keeps coming back to me. I've been led to, on YouTube, Vanilla Sky, which Earl Purdy recommended, and so did David Hoffmeister, as a Course in Miracles. And on YouTube, there is short synapses, because the movie is rather strange. I've watched the whole movie years ago. But there's like a summary of what the meaning of the movie, how it ends. And then there's another YouTube video on the reality of what it means, which is very much what we're talking about tonight. Mm. How he was dreaming. The whole thing was a dream. It turned into a nightmare. And I was thinking of that when I was going through all of this situation with the fire. I still felt very safe and protected. I knew that my client, who I adore, was, very safe and protected. But I think as I'm going through this and learning, there's something so, we think of the body and it's so much like surface, but there's something so much deeper in our protection that goes so much deeper than beyond the body. And going back to kind of the near-death experience, I was talking to a gentleman a few months back, and he was in a horrible car accident. He was in a horrible car accident and woke up with his body in the morgue. We say near death, he left his body. He went with Jesus. And however that is, I have no idea. He said it was so wonderful. He felt so loved and so protected. The hard part was coming back. Mm-hmm. And his son had died a few years before that. And he realized he didn't need to feel bad for his son passing. His son was wonderfully protected, mm-hmm. and in such a great place. And I think going back to, if we really knew, we would have no fear about any of this because it's a dream. Just like in the Vanilla Sky part, if you feel led, if anyone feels led to do that, it's had a huge impact on me on remembering that this is a dream.
Awesome.
And that my body isn't really my body. It's a dream.
Thank you, Jana. Thank you for that recommendation and for your share. That's powerful. Thank you, everyone. And Eric, I just wanted to acknowledge you in the chat. Thank you for your comment that yes, if you're too fearful, a miracle will increase the fear. And yes, it does say something about that in the Course. Jesus counsels us to use magic, and as you don't accept that as your own creation. So yeah, if we need magic, we can use magic, and we do it without guilt. I would always say that I still take vitamins actually, and I still take them with the Holy Spirit. And I trust that my need for or belief in them will fall away when I don't need them anymore. So
yeah.
Thank you, Eric. And yeah, thank you, everybody. Paula, were you going to add something? Or
no, have a happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. I love you all. And I will see you next week. Thank you. Bye.
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 Bye. Bye, Carla. Bye. Bye, Wendy. Bye, Maureen.
Carla.
Bye, everyone.
Love your chicken.
Thank you. I feel like Henrietta's with me. Like I wanna pet her. Oh. Bye, everyone. Mwah.